We finished up by discussing how Krishna can perfectly reciprocate one's loving propensities in different relationships called mellows or rasas. And we discussed how if we simply deposit our dormant loving propensity in Krishna, then our life becomes successful. So Prabhupada concluded by saying, one can directly perceive the effects that love for Krishna has on his life. So you may remember we discussed the fact that we do have a loving propensity. Many times we forget that. We forget that Krishna consciousness means the art of loving Krishna. In the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this science of Krishna consciousness is called the king of all knowledge, the king of all confidential things, and the supreme science of transcendental realization. Yet, we can directly experience the results of this science of Krishna consciousness because it is very easy to practice and is very pleasurable. So there's no question of a religious belief. We've said it again and again that everywhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives you instructions how to experience Krishna consciousness. Krishna never says, just believe this. He says, I'm going to tell you how with your mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Asamshayam samagram mam yatha yasasi tatstrinu. So what more do you want? Krishna says, I'm going to teach you the process, how your mind can be attached to me. Our mind has to be attached to something. So Krishna proposes to teach you how your mind can become attached to him, and therefore your loving propensity will find its perfect object. People want to give their love, but they choose the most hellish objects for their love. Dayasara, I'd say, we just happened to be watching one video about the Indian nationalist leader, Bose, who, as you know, Prabhupada said, he was the one who actually drove the British out, not Gandhi, because he built up an army and was threatening India, threatening the Indian colonial government. So, he went to Singapore to recruit an army amongst all the couple of million Indians who lived in Southeast Asia. So we saw him giving his speech. He was saying, he was speaking like thousands of recruited soldiers in the INA, the Indian National Army. This is about in the early 40s. So he was saying, I can promise you only hunger, thirst, and death. And they were all cheering. Netaji ki jai, Netaji ki jai. That's his name, Netaji. And Jai Hind, all glories to the free land of India. Here he is saying, I can only promise you hunger, thirst, and death. And they're all cheering. Yes, yes, yes. They want to give. And they interviewed some of the soldiers and officers who are still living today. And they were saying, I would give my life to him for 1,000 times over. So people, they want to give of themselves. When they start their romantic affairs, they're hoping, I'll be able to give of myself in perfection and receive in perfection. All this shows that people have a loving propensity. Krishna consciousness means to take that dormant loving propensity and attach it to Krishna. Then life becomes perfect. But we have to be trained how to do that, because we have a very perverted love of matter. In that respect, we're all perverts. No one likes to think of himself or herself as a pervert. But that's what you are when you try to love matter. Krishna consciousness proposes to cure that disease and attach your love to Krishna. So everything we do here is meant for that purpose. Even the austerities of getting along with one another, it's all meant to arouse love of Krishna. Whatever percentage of Krishna consciousness we perform will become an eternal asset to our life, for it is imperishable in all circumstances. The Lord says in the Gita, Svapam apyasa dharmasya chayate mahatobaya. Just a little bit of advancement in Krishna consciousness protects you from the greatest danger. What's that greatest danger? That you lose your human form of life. And people don't care about that. Those of you who were here Sunday at the feast, you could see. This is the farthest thing from anyone's mind, that I'll lose my human form of life. One young man was even saying, yeah, I'll be a toad in my next life. And as long as I don't remember that I was a human, what's the problem? They don't understand the wealth implicit in having a human body. And when we use the human body simply for economic development and sense gratification, we are ignoring the wealth. Now, Prabhupada says, it has now been actually proved that today's confused and frustrated younger generation in the Western countries can directly perceive the results of channeling the loving propensity toward Krishna alone. So you're all supposed to evidence that. You're supposed to evidence the direct results from channeling your loving propensity to Krishna. Otherwise, what are you doing here? It is said that although one executes severe austerities, penances, and sacrifices in his life, if he fails to awaken his dormant love for Krishna, then all his penances are to be considered useless. So we were watching this movie of this great nationalist leader, Bose Netaji, and so many austerities he went through. In the end, he dies. And then what is his destination? We're not trained to consider that. He was giving big speeches. We are so eager that our blood flows for the motherland. This is not considered human from the Vedic standpoint. Prabhupada always pointed out that in Sanskrit, there's no word for nationalism. The closest you can get is Bhauma Ijjadi, love of the land. But in terms of nationalism, there's no word. Such an insane concept is a recent concoction of the age of Kali. So all you'll read about in the Vedic literatures is persons identifying with the land of their birth. But nationalism? No, you won't find it. On the other hand, if one has awakened his dormant love for Krishna, then what is the use in executing austerities and penances unnecessarily? So yes, life in Krishna consciousness has its austerities and penances, just like material life has its austerities and penances. But everything we do here is geared to arouse our love of Krishna. So if we don't know who Krishna is, how can we function properly? Just like in an ordinary relationship, if you don't know who the other person is, if you don't know about them, how can there be a properly functioning relationship? So as soon as we neglect the art, science, and culture of loving Krishna, then the dark clouds come in our life. Because we've neglected proper execution of the process. We're not mindful of what we're doing, that we're serving Krishna. And then our senses start to roam over material existence. And Maya reciprocates with you, as we were discussing this morning, I think. Yes, there's hope for you. There'll be fulfillment for you in the illusory energy. You'll find your niche. There's a place for you. There's a time for you. It's all waiting for you. Hold my hand and I'll take you there. This is how Maya beckons to us. And we slide right into that because we become neglectful of the process of loving Krishna. Part of loving Krishna means to get free from contamination. So our offering of transcendental loving service to the Lord becomes very potent. Yes, that is what we're doing. Transcendental loving service to the Lord. Very nice expression. And our life should be full of that. Transcendental loving service to the Lord. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is the unique gift of Lord Chaitanya to the fallen souls of this age. It is a very simple method which has actually been carried out during the last 4 years in the Western countries. Prabhupada wrote this in 1970. And there is no doubt that this movement can satisfy the dormant loving propensities of humanity. So everyone agrees you have a dormant loving propensity? Does anyone not agree? And without trying to satisfy Krishna, what would you do with your loving propensity? You would try to squeeze pleasure out of matter. This book, Krishna, is another presentation to help the Krishna Consciousness Movement in the Western world. This transcendental literature is published with profuse illustrations. People love to read various kinds of fiction to spend their time and energy. Now this tendency can be directed to Krishna. This is how merciful Prabhupada is. When he first came to America, New York, he said he spent the first year just studying the Americans, watching them in the streets, checking out the bookstores, seeing how to inject Krishna consciousness. So obviously he saw that people were very attracted to reading fiction. So, because he's representing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he thought, let me write a book that will be attractive to them and immerse them in Krishna's pastimes. So now he's going to give you further incentive. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that even a little effort expended on the path of Krishna consciousness can save one from the greatest danger. Hundreds of thousands of examples can be cited of people who escaped the greatest dangers of life due to a slight advancement in Krishna consciousness. We therefore request everyone to take advantage of this great transcendental literature. So how many of you actually feel motivated to take advantage of the transcendental literature? One will find that by reading one page after another, an immense treasure of knowledge in art, science, literature, philosophy, and religion will be revealed. And ultimately, by reading this one book, Krishna, love of Godhead will fructify. So what do you want? You want something else? So now Prabhupada thanks the various persons for helping him print this book. He thanked George Harrison for his donation of $19,000. Now we have the Krishna book for us to take advantage of. And in this way, our love of Krishna will develop. So yes, you all are supposed to learn how to love Krishna. That's your responsibility. You have to be alert and alive about this. When you forget, then you become very lethargic in devotional service. You begin to wonder, what happened to my enthusiasm? Well, I guess it's just part of getting older in Krishna consciousness. Some devotees told me it would be like this, that I would be fired up for a few years and then I would mellow out and realize you don't have to try so hard. Many have told me like that. I'll never forget, there's one devotee, actually it was Craig who I brought here before. He's from Christ Church, so he joined the temple. And He was very enthusiastic. Yes, okay. I'm just a 19-year-old boy, and I've had enough of the material world. This is what I want to do. So for the first month, so many well-wishers in the wider devotional community would come up to him and say, "You're fired up now, but let me tell you, in a year you're going to have a lot of problems. It happens to everybody." "You're enthusiastic now, but there's going to be crises coming. You might as well realize that and just mellow out now. It happens to everyone. We all start off fired up, and then naturally, you know, we realize, you know, that you just, we're conditioned. And we, you know, we just can't do it all, so we just try to do a little something. So we understand the phase you're going through now. You're fired up. But don't worry. Soon, you're going to hit that wall. We all hit that wall. And then your devotional service will become more balanced." As you begin to realize that it's practically impossible to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Therefore, you might as well cultivate some selfish desires while you're lingering. So he kept hearing this again and again. So finally, he went to the temple president, you know, in innocent desperation, and said, "You know, I joined the temple in order to get free of material existence and go back to Godhead. Is it possible? Can I do it?" He was so desperate that, you know, "Is it possible? This is what I want. But is it possible? Can it be done?" So when we forget that we're supposed to be loving Krishna, all these diseases come upon us. Lethargy means you forgot the goal. You lost sight of Krishna. Clouds have covered the sun. The process of Krishna consciousness is so precise that as soon as we back away from our sadhana, back away from deity worship, back away from hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, then the clouds come. Association with devotees doesn't mean, you know, gossiping. Prabhupada really never liked that. He called it shop talk or camp talk. Campus talk. "Can't you hear about such and such and such?" "Says, really? Oh no, I can't believe it." Association with devotees doesn't mean to catch up on the latest gossip. "She really did that? Really? You think, is he going to marry her? Well, we'll have to wait and see. I don't think he's the right one for her." This is a waste of time. Association with devotees means hearing and chanting together. When we stop hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, then we very easily forget about Krishna, in spite of our best intentions. The way it works is we lose the ability to discriminate between matter and spirit. Material affairs and devotional service start to become indistinguishable. On our own, it's very difficult to distinguish. But when we're associating with devotees, there's always somebody who will raise the standard. There's always somebody who will provide a higher level that we can experience by association. "Oh, well, we don't have to be the way we are. Look at that one. Oh, I want to be like that too." You develop aspirations, and then Krishna in your heart notices, "Oh, you're aspiring for a higher level." But that aspiration only comes by association. Otherwise, we just start to fall into the muck. "Well, you know, I'm the way I am. It's me, you know. I've just got to do what I can do, you know." Yeah? You know, right? "Just got to do what I can do. That's all that can be expected of me, you know. In this lifetime, I'm the way I am. So, that's it, you know. I just try to do what I can. I just try to serve Krishna how I can, and the good Lord is in everyone's heart. He knows how I am, and that I want to be this way, and I don't want to change." So, so. But when we are in the association of devotees, then our aspirations develop. Well, I don't have to be the way I am. And I don't want to be the way I am. I want to be what Krishna wants. So, from within your heart, Krishna notices, oh, you're aspiring, you want something better. Okay, I'll arrange the facilities for you. But without the association of devotees, we don't develop that higher aspiration. We can be living right in the devotional community, in the general vicinity of the temple, and we just seal ourselves off in our house and contemplate our navels and our minds. We can be so close, yet so far away. But all this is easily cured by remembering we are supposed to be learning how to love Krishna. That means we need to know something about Krishna and the process of loving Krishna. Doesn't that sound exciting? Learning the process to love Krishna. Then, whatever you're doing takes on a completely different aura, a completely different tinge, whether it's family life or working, anything. Because the center of our life is loving Krishna and finding out about Krishna. That means enthusing others also to find out about Krishna. In family life, when the husband and wife are enthusing one another to understand Krishna more and serve Krishna more, then family life takes on a completely different aura. Otherwise, it's just like a struggle for dominance. Diplomacy, politics, and dominance. That's family life without Krishna in the center. Who's going to control who? How can I get this out of you without you getting this out of me? Deals. But when the husband and wife are trying to inspire one another how to love Krishna, then the family life, in spite of material shortcomings, the family life becomes a positive instrument in Krishna's service. But even if you're single and you forget the goal is to love Krishna, then you can think, oh, my life is becoming so dry. I just don't have any relief for my heart. I don't have anything to sink my heart into. I feel so barren and empty. All these problems can be cured simply by remembering we are supposed to love Krishna. That will take some purification and some practice, but we're very excited about the career. Otherwise, as you heard Sunday evening, what will you do? These young persons, these young students, just babbling, had no idea what their future would be. But the adults, the older adults, aren't any different. People are so willing to trash their whole human form of life. So willing to do that. This is how they're trained by society. Just trash your whole lifetime pursuing the most useless goals and don't think anything of it. Don't worry about it. So what if you don't know? Doesn't make any difference. Who cares about knowledge? Who cares about knowledge of the self? Who cares about knowledge of God? Doesn't matter that you don't know these things. You can still be a good person. You can still be a good citizen. What practical effect is there from knowing these things? We don't see any difference. Of course, we just read Prabhupada saying that you can perceive the practical effects of loving Krishna directly in your life. That requires training. Now we'll go to the introduction, and Prabhupada describes the disciple succession, and then he begins to talk about Krishna. Krishna himself has explained in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that whenever there are discrepancies in the regular principles of man's religious life, and a prominence of irreligious activities, he appears on this earthly planet. In other words, when Lord Sri Krishna appeared, there was a necessity of minimizing the load of sinful activities accumulated on this planet or in this universe. So you may ask, where is Krishna now? Isn't there a great necessity now? Yes. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated, Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. In the age of Kali, the Lord comes as Namarupa. He comes in his form as the holy name. Now, when you take shelter of the Namarupa, the form of the holy name, what are you doing? You're saying, Hare Krishna, please engage me in your service. So when the service comes and you run in the opposite direction, what is the use? It's like a child calling out to his mother, Mom, Mom, Mom. And then the mother comes and the child says, oh, I didn't call you. So when we chant Hare Krishna, we're asking for service. The more eager you are to render service, the more effective your chanting is. The more effective your chanting is, the more eager you'll be to render service. The two go hand in hand. Eagerness in chanting and service means your love of Krishna is developing. And then you begin to become thrilled just to hear about Krishna. How many of you think that that's possible, that you can be thrilled just by hearing about Krishna? This is the wealth of the Vaishnava. You're able to sit down and hear about Krishna and be thrilled and satisfied. When you fall into Maya, you forget that. You start wondering, where's the fulfillment coming from? Where's the satisfaction coming from? Where is the love? But when you're properly following the process of bhakti yoga, then you always know. Just by hearing about Krishna, just by serving Krishna, I'm satisfied. I feel fulfilled. That's what it means, that you can directly perceive the effects love of Krishna has on your life, even in the beginning stages. For affairs of the material creation, Lord Mahavishnu, the plenary portion of Krishna, is in charge. Thus, when the Lord descends, the incarnation emanates from Vishnu. So Vishnu is like Krishna in his institutional capacity, his institutional capacity of cosmic management and maintenance. Simply to understand the Supreme as creator or maintainer or the all-pervading force, that can be done from within the modes of material nature. But to understand the Supreme as the Supreme Enjoyer, that is very special. And that is what Lord Chaitanya is giving, distributing freely knowledge that the Supreme is the Supreme Enjoyer with confidential pastimes and qualities. The Bhagavatam explains that actually the Lord has nothing directly to do with the cosmic manifestation. But it's stated in that way just so people will not get the idea that matter has any kind of supervisory capacity. So in the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyachesa Charatra. Krishna says, under my direction, the cosmic manifestation is happening. It's not that the Lord is directly immersed in these things. No, he has his Vishnu expansions. But of course, all the Vishnu expansions can be traced back to Krishna. Mahavishnu is the original cause of material creation. And from him, Garbhadakshai Vishnu expands, and then Chiradakshai Vishnu. Generally, all the incarnations appearing within this material universe are planetary expansions from Chiradakshai Vishnu. Therefore, the business of minimizing the overload of sinful activities on this earth does not belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. Well, since it is not Krishna's direct responsibility to order affairs on the earth and minimize the burden of sinful activity, what is Krishna's responsibility? Krishna simply enjoys. This is what we don't like. We think this is our business. We're willing to allow God can do anything, create, hold up planets, have a beard, anything, but in the mirror and see the Supreme, you can say to yourself, I am the supreme failure at enjoying. You try this. Just go up to the mirror and look in and say, I am the supreme failure at enjoyment. Does that sound plausible? But then what? Once you're smart enough to understand you're the supreme failure at enjoyment, then what? What do you do? And what's that? Oh, yeah, you're no fun. Simply realizing that you're a failure at material enjoyment is not enough. That realization won't stick with you. Therefore, you see so many times persons, they get fatigued from material enjoyment and think they want to give it up. And then, after some time, they get right back into it again. Without positive engagement for the senses and the devotional service of the Lord, we cannot refrain from material activities just because we got fatigued from time to time. You understand? Buddhism becomes popular because it teaches people about the foolishness of desire and attachment. And they all talk the lingo, desire, attachment, just gotta let go. But you don't see any practical effects in their life because they have nothing positive to cling to. Therefore, while talking about desire and attachment, they are absorbed in as much desire and attachment as anybody else. But when Krishna appears, all the Vishnu expansions join with him. Krishna's different expansions, namely Narayan, the quadruple expansion of Vasudev, Sankarsan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, as well as partial planar expansions like Matsya, the incarnation of a fish, and the Yuga avatars, incarnations for the millennium, and the Manvantara avatars, incarnations who appear during the reigns of the Manus, all combine together and appear with the body of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is the complete whole, and thus all planetary expansions and incarnations always live with him. So when Krishna comes, all the other incarnations are also present. Therefore, when Krishna appeared, Lord Vishnu was with him. Krishna actually appears in order to demonstrate his Vrindavan pastimes, and in this way to attract the fortunate conditioned souls and invite them back home, back to Godhead. So you have your invitation. You have an invitation to go back to Godhead. Now what do you say to the invitation? Not ready yet. Not now. Next year. When I'm older. What is the usual response to the invitation? Yeah. In time, right? After I've kind of had a more experience, naturally then I'll give up material life, right? It'll all happen naturally. Have any of you naturally given up material life? What do you say, Harvey? Have you naturally given up material life? Just one day it kind of slid off of you. No, you had to, with your intelligence, make a stand that I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to do that instead. And then sometimes you had to push and struggle. I'm not going to surrender to my mind and senses. I'm going to find out about Krishna. So we have an invitation to go back to Godhead. That's why Krishna comes and displays his most private personal pastimes. He's saying, look, see, you belong in this, come on. And we say, oh, looks great, but not now. Thanks for coming, we appreciate it. Come again. Don't call us, we'll call you. The killing of the demons in Vrindavan was actually carried out only by the Vishnu portion of Krishna. You see, in Vrindavan, demons were attacking practically on schedule. They served as scene changers in Krishna's pastimes. Krishna would play in the forest in one way, and then a demon would attack. Krishna would kill the demon, and then Krishna would start playing another way with his coward boyfriends. So the demons simply served as scene changers. In this way, Krishna used everything for his pleasure, even the attacks of demons. The Lord's abode is described in the Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, 20th verse, where it is stated that there is another eternal nature, the spiritual sky, which is transcendental to this manifested and non-manifested matter. In Krishna consciousness, we learn how to become abode conscious, destination conscious. We're meant to choose our destination. We must be aware of the different values of the different destinations. And we have to think, where am I going next? Because we are going. This information is not taught in society, therefore we say that we don't have a human civilization. They have no idea of their destination. But in Krishna consciousness, it's held out in front of you at all times. Where are you going next? What are your qualifications? The manifested world can be seen in the form of many stars and planetary systems, such as the sun and the moon. But beyond this, there is a non-manifested portion which is not approachable by anyone in this body. And beyond that non-manifested matter is the spiritual kingdom. That kingdom is described in the Bhagavad Gita as supreme and eternal, never to be annihilated. This material nature is subjected to repeated creation and annihilation, but that part, the spiritual nature, remains as it is eternally. The supreme abode of the personality of Godhead Krishna is also described in the Brahma Sahita as the abode of Chintamani. So, we have so much description of Krishna's personal abode. We don't just say, go to heaven. We have full description what the ultimate destination is. In the Bible, you get a tiny hint. Jesus is said to have said, in my Father's house there are many mansions. If it wasn't true, I wouldn't have told you so. That's all. But what is the Father like? And what's the mansion like? You get full description in the Vaishnava texts. But then people say, oh, that's just too much detail. It just sounds too real. It sounds too personal. It can't be the truth. Real spiritual truth is vague and undefined. So do we have any questions? you all are thinking of how you have a career of loving Krishna. Sometimes we may grow weak, but by hearing, we should become strong again and pick up our career. How does that sound? I have a career for loving Krishna. Sometimes parents, they get on their children's case. What are you going to do for yourself? What are your plans? Our career is to love Krishna, to revive our dormant loving propensity. Then we'll practically perceive the effects that love of Krishna has in our life. So we've got to kind of wake up a bit, you know, and realize what we're doing here. Sometimes we forget. When we become imprecise in our devotional service, which includes hearing and chanting, then we forget why we're in the association of devotees. Oh, I've got to go to the temple. Haven't been there in 4 days. If I don't go, people are going to get on my case. Okay, we'll just go. We'll bow down. We'll say some prayers. We'll say Hari Bol with the Prabhus. Catch up on the latest gossip. Get a few bites to eat and then head home. Try to get out the door before they try to engage you. They just don't understand, you know. We live in the practical world, the real world, and they keep trying to engage you. We're doing as much as we can. It's not the best, but, you know, we believe in Krishna. No, this kind of attitude will not bring you the desired effect. That's why Nectar of Devotion instructs that you should always try to associate with a devotee considered more advanced than you. And that way, you're always becoming progressive in your execution of bhakti. If you just hang out with devotees on your own level, you're not in contact with anything higher. You all just tend to reinforce one another. But if you follow the Nectar of Devotion and try to hang out with someone considered more advanced than you, then you'll get an impetus to go to a higher level. So, no questions? Yes. Let's say Krishna is walking through the door of Mahavishnu. But Mahavishnu is just a plenary portion of Krishna. He becomes the doorway for the original personality of Godhead to come. Yashyaika nirvashita kalam atavalam jivanti loma jagat jivanti loma. What? Jivanti loma. Vilaja jagatandanata vishnur mahansa yasya kalavishesho govindamari purusha samamajami. The Brahmas and other lords of the universe, they only last, at most, one breath of Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu himself is just a portion of a plenary portion of Govinda, Krishna. Krishna has his personal way of doing things. He does it with the greatest artistry so that you'll be attracted to hear about it. And when you become attracted to hearing about Krishna, you'll go back to Godhead. You know, all the arts, dance, song, poetry, it all emanates from Goloka Vrindavan as nectar coming from Krishna's mouth, passed on to his consorts. That's the origin of all the arts. Because in their perfect use, they're for pleasing Krishna. The gopis are the most perfect musicians, the most perfect at culture, all simply for Krishna's pleasure. We actually don't know what music is in art. But the perfection of music and art is in the spiritual world, in Krishna's personal neighborhood. Any else? So you all should be thinking now. Our career is to love Krishna. We are meant to revive our loving propensity for Krishna. And we're meant to enthuse each other to do that. When I am weak and you are strong, you help me. And vice versa. When you are weak and I am strong, I help you. That is the nature of the society of devotees. Not that when someone becomes weak, you just say, oh, I knew she'd become weak. And just leave a person to drown. That's very cruel. You should always be enthusing one another. Come on, let's go. We can do it. You have to be calculating. How much of your life do you have left? Prahlad Maharaj helps you to analyze your life. You think, okay, you think you could live 70 years. Is anyone here near 70 or 60? So you think a full life spans around 70, 75 years, right? You all think you've got that much time, yes? But Prahlad Maharaj points out, basically half the time is wasted sleeping. So you divide 75 in half, you've got about 37, 38 years. Half the time is wasted sleeping or cleaning up after sleeping, taking a shower, or preparing to go to sleep. It's half your life. Taking naps during the day, basically half your life. Preparing to sleep, sleeping, getting up, bathing after sleeping, napping during the day. So you've got about 37 years left. But of those 37 years, remember, the first basically 15 years of your life are useless. You're just a spaced out kid, and then you become a teenager, your hormones are boiling, it's all you think about. So your first 15 years of your life are useless. Okay, we already took out the sleeping time, so it's half of 15. That's basically 7-8 years useless. So that's 37 minus 7, we'll say. You got 30 years left. And then what about the end of your life? The last 10 years of your life, 15, 10 years. You're an invalid, you're old, you're useless then. You're 65 to 75. Because of so much illicit sex life when you're young, when you're old, your body is just so painful and broken and miserable. So, more wasted time. All right? Take off 5 years because we already took off the sleeping years. So you're down to about 25 years now. Then, so many years in the middle of teenage life and old age are wasted in simple economic development, family maintenance, the constant battle to push on a family, which everyone knows is hard work. Husband and wife negotiating and tearing apart their relationship and building it up again and tearing each other apart and making up, trying to get money. Oh, that's what we need for our family. If we just had more money, then we'd be happy. Working, raising the children. Even in a Krishna conscious family, it's a great struggle raising children. So, there goes your last 25 years. We already took away the sleeping time. So, it's all gone. Simple. It's all gone. That's it. So Prahlad Maharaj was teaching this to his schoolmates. He was 5 years old. He was explaining this. Therefore, he said, Kumara Acharat Pragya Dharman Bhagavatana Dulabha Manasam Janma Tarapya Duvamartadam. From the very beginning of your life, even 5 years old, take up Bhagavad Dharma, become Krishna conscious, don't delay. Dulabha Manasam Janma. This human form of life is very difficult to get, but still it has artha value. It's temporary. Adruvam, but still it has value, artha. In that, you can revive your dormant love of Krishna. So let's remember what we're doing. We need each other to remind ourselves of that. Our temple program, the processes of devotional service, all meant to revive our love of Krishna. It's a very exciting career. Anything else? Another one. What do you think the value is of sleep? Why does it seem attractive? Really? What do you mean you don't function well when you're awake? Well, why are you so tired? Is it because of sickness or overeating? Well, gradually, you'll get tired of overeating. Generally, when you become a new devotee, you really stuff yourself with prasad. But after a while, you realize that it's not so good for your service. I remember when I was a new devotee, myself and the other new devotees, we used to, this is in New York, they would always have a halva and sweet rice for breakfast every morning. Many devotees were joining. Every morning, halva and sweet rice. So myself and the other new bhaktas, we always make sure we sat next to Jayadvaita. He was a brahmachari then. Because, yeah, you see, what they would do is, back then, you wouldn't have plates. You'd have pieces of wax paper, you know? You have that here? And they would spread that out on the floor, wax paper. That was your plate, you know? Everyone would have their piece of wax paper. It would just be all put out in rows. And then someone would come along and, you know, put the halva and the sweet rice on the wax paper. And meanwhile, everybody is waiting outside the prasad room, you know, until all the prasad is served, and then the server would fling open the door. So, if you were a smart new devotee, you'd find an older devotee to sit next to. So, most of us, we try to sit next to Jayadvaita because he would always sit down at his wax paper and ask for another piece of wax paper and push most of his halva and sweet rice onto an empty piece of wax paper. So if you sat next to him, you could, yeah, I'll take that. You know, giving help to an older devotee, you know, relieving him of his extra load of halva. What else do I remember? Well, back then, if you were a 2 year devotee, you were, you know, senior Vaishnav. Wow, he's been here for 2 years. Wow. How advanced. What else? Another job we had. You got me talking about prasad. When I was a Sankirtan devotee, then Arikesh Swami, he was in charge of the kitchen. So he was a brahmachari back then, too. So it was a real fired-up kitchen. They would cook, and then they'd all go out in Sankirtan in the afternoon, all the cooks. So I was doing full-time Sankirtan 7 days a week. We'd even stay out on Sundays. There's no question of coming back early for the Sunday program, the Sankirtan leader. It was a Romapad. He was a brahmachari back then, too. It was a real power-packed temple then. So he would say, all right, it's Sunday. Who's in Maya? Who wants to come back with a Sunday program? This is the way it was back then. Of course, no, I'm not in Maya. I'll stay out. So it was like that for a while. Then gradually things got a little liberal and we were allowed to, you know, to come back for part of the Sunday program. So my job, I was appointed by the Sankirtan devotees to come back a little bit earlier than them, because we knew that at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, all the cooks would have a meeting in the Sankirtan office. And with Hari Keshaswami, he was a Brahmacharya then, they would analyze all the preparations and, you know, point out which are good and which aren't so good, which need improvement. So since the Sankirtan devotees were very serious about their stomach capacity, they wanted a scouting report, because they didn't want to, you know, fill up on any preparations that weren't the best. So it was my job to do reconnaissance. I would get back to the temple early, and although the door to the Sankirtan office was closed because the cooks were having a meeting discussing the feast, I would press my ear up to the door and, you know, and get all the information. You know, chutney, not so good. Sweet rice, wonderful. So then, when it came time to have the feast served, because they would serve the devotees during the lecture, because there were so many guests, you couldn't serve the devotees and the guests together. So the guests would be at the lecture, and then they would serve the devotees at that time. So the Sankirtan devotees, we'd be coming in, you know, we'd be dressed in our, you know, street clothes, because we were distributing at the bus terminal. We'd all sit down. The server would come along, and he'd come along with the sweet rice. And let's say we heard that week the sweet rice was burnt. So he would come home with the sweet rice, and all the Sankirtan boys would kind of just look the other way, like, very detached, you know. No, thank you, Prabhupada. No. Just not today, you know. Trying to be a bit austere. And then let's say we heard the pineapple halva was just really outrageous. And back then, the halva would practically just float in butter. So the server would come by with the halva, and the same persons who wouldn't take a drop of street rice, you know, he'd put a big scoop of halva on the wax paper, and then you put another. So this went on for about 14 preparations, everybody in unison, you know, like about 20 Sankirtan devotees refusing one preparation and taking mountains of the other preparation. So the servers are trying to figure out what's going on. They didn't understand. We had the whole thing figured out, you know. It's such a crucial activity, taking prasad. We didn't want to waste our stomach capacity on any preparations that were not up to the mark. So we had to, you know, we had to plan it all out very carefully, you know. So that's the way we used to do it. But after a while, you begin to realize the pleasure in prasad is simply in the devotion. I have a simple test, as you know. If I start chanting after I finish prasad, that means it's very good prasad. Any other questions? So please, work together.